This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 541, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 541. I am Josh Flanagan, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
He's back.
He's returned.
I'm excited. I think I missed this. And with Ron,
where did you go?
Hello, I'm Ron. Josh, we were very concerned.
I haven't listened. Were there?
Yes.
I can't imagine what was said.
we didn't know where you were. All we knew is that you weren't on the show, but we didn't know where you were.
Okay.
So. So are you some sort of Chuck Barris type who disappears yeah. with no
explanation? Just I'm gone.
We are iFanboy and we like comics. Everyone stack of comics and deflect. And one of us picks their favorite book, and we call that the pick of the week. We will talk about that book, other books, some books, stuff. I'm gonna do things, get some stuff, talk about some mail.
I'm very proud of a Chuck Barris reference, by the way.
Yeah. yeah. And there's always a moment where I'm like, Chuck Berry? Nope. We're not talking about the poet laureate of rock. It will be fun. That's the next line in the script I didn't get to. Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. Do the math. Connor, you had the pick.
I did. And this was a really strong week for me. I had a hard time making the pick. It came down to a handful of books, and I whittled it down to two really strong books. We were going to talk about both of them on this show. By the end of the day, Aquaman number one from writer Dan Abnett, artist Brad Walker, Andrew Hennessy on inks, Gabe Eltabe on colors. This, I think, was the issue that I wanted Aquaman Rebirth number one to be.
Interesting.
It felt exciting. It felt somewhat fresh. The art, and we're going to talk a lot about the art in the DC books this week. The art was very off DC model in a good way. It didn't feel like a house style that we've all gotten beaten into submission with over the last 5 years. I really loved the look of Brad Walker's very untraditional superhero stuff. And he's obviously done it before, but this is Aquaman's about as traditional a superhero as you can imagine. And so his take on these characters and the page layouts and Even the body language was very unusual. This was a really good-looking book, and one of my favorite things about it was that it was a surprising issue. So this is all about Aquaman opening up the Atlantean embassy and all the dignitaries coming to visit it.
It has a neat name. What was it called again? It's like the something.
We'll find it as we talk.
What was that? Yeah, I'll find it. I was very impressed by the branding of the Atlantean embassy. Spindrift. I want to go to the Spindrift. It sounds like an amusement park.
A little metal.
Or a laundromat. So they're opening up for the press and dignitaries and their employees, like the Royal Marine, the Royal Navy's liaison has shown up, and she meets an Atlantean military guy. You think, okay, here's going to be the romance, the subplot romance for this series, and then he immediately gets killed. That was surprising. I expected that, you know, to play out more.
Yep.
So that was, I always like being surprised in these stories. And this felt like a fresh Aquaman story. I know one of the things we complained a lot about with Rebirth was it felt very retready. Whereas this, even though it's still the tension between the surface world and the Atlanteans, which is never going to not be there, it still felt like it was done in an interesting way. And this felt really, very exciting.
So now, Mike, and I somewhat agree with you there, but then it I felt, you know, it breaks down into a violent conflict with Black Manta, which just seems, again, like same old, same old. Did you not feel that, or?
Well, it's a superhero comic, so eventually there's going to be a violent conflict with the arch nemesis, and that's
fair enough,
fine.
Fair enough.
What's interesting is that, like, I've read, like, a handful of Aquaman now and then. I don't really remember reading a ton of Black Manta, though.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's, like, his Luthor, but I've... You know, like, so I was like, you know what? I don't know if I've actually ever seen this outside of Super Friends. So
I was going to say, but I think the majority of my exposure to Black Manta has been Super Friends.
Yeah. And because I haven't really read it in comics form, I was like, all right, you know, let's go with it. Let's see what it is. Because wasn't there like a very different Black Manta in the New 52?
There was.
I feel like this one.
Well, there's Black Manta and there's also Ocean Master. He has a lot of very similar villains. The Black Manta, his Joker, is basically his Joker.
Yeah, those villains don't tend to stick with me all that much.
Well, they brought Black Manta back with Jeff Johns' run with the New 52, and I just have echoes of it.
I think I was out.
I will say that the Black Manta character design is fantastic.
Oh, that giant helmet? That's,
that's great.
It's both scary and ridiculous at the same time.
It's one of those things where they were like, what if we just keep with this really old goofy costume, which is so unusual for DC now? So it's refreshing. We're gonna ignore that it's ridiculous, and we're gonna treat him like a real villain. It's great.
What did you think of Brad Walker's art?
I pretty much what you did. Like I like him a lot. I like, you know, it's not blowing my doors off, but it's different enough from everything that I dig it. I think I want to say it was Paul Pelletier maybe on this for the last sort of run I was reading, which is like very Jurgensian. Mm-hmm. Is that sort of, you know, like, and I like it when they switch it up from there. And I think it's necessary. I was impressed by, I don't think we talked about it much at the time, but I think adding Dan Abnett to a bunch of these books has been a real good move for DC. Like he's good. Like he's not out there.
I read, you know, I didn't read Justice League 51 last week.
Oh yeah.
Was it last week? 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. 52 came out this week.
Yeah. Because my thought was, okay, we've moved on to Rebirth. I'm just not going to read any more of the lingering, you know,
issues that came out late. It's so weird that lingering, it's throwing.
However, Josh, of all people, said you must read this, and I did, and it was written by Dan Abnett. It was a one-shot story of a flashback to the first time Dick Grayson as Robin went on a mission with the Justice League, and it was fantastic.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I think Dan Abnett's a really strong get. He's not a name that... he's not an A-list guy, but he's like high B-list guy.
Who is his former Andy Lanning. Like, I don't know what their division of labor was when they were working together, but you know, Abnett and Lanning did a lot of really wonderful comics. There was a time where if they were doing a book, it was like, get that book.
Yeah, solid, very solid.
And I'm feeling a lot of that in the Abnett stuff I'm reading. It's making me really happy. It's been sort of the best part of all this. And I think that you're right. Like, that first Rebirth issue, those were all almost throwaways. They just did them.
And now as we're getting into it, we get to see sort of what the stuff actually is.
Let's talk about that for a second. So we were lamenting before this show started that there were no Rebirth issues this week, so we couldn't do our ratings segment. Ironically, because this is the week that Mates came back with their 100th episode. And
ratings.
Mates is the inspiration for the ratings segment. If you don't know what that is, look up Mike and Tom Eat Snacks. And
congratulations to them for 100 episodes. 100 episodes,
yes. Yeah. And there's no ratings. There's no Rebirth books next week either. And it's just such a bizarre strategy to do these books but put them out piecemeal, but then also then do number ones. I feel like they just should have just done number ones.
Yeah. Friend of mine put up a picture of Superman Rebirth 1 and then Superman number 1. And he's like, I don't know what I'm supposed to read first. And I was looking at them going, you know what? I have no idea. That storyline has action and JLA stories that weave in between them, and it's a mess.
Yeah. I told my girlfriend that Wonder Woman number 1 came out this week, and she's a big Wonder Woman fan. And she said, I thought I already read that. And I was like, No, you didn't.
Very confusing approach to take the covered dress and keep the word Rebirth on these number one issues. Like, it's confusing. It's very confusing.
It is. Like, when I saw them next to each other, I realized, because I was reading them as they came out, but if I'd have gone into the store, like, 2 weeks later to pick up stuff, I'd be completely lost.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they should have just done number ones. They should have done these Rebirth stories. It would have been much easier for everyone, including us. We would have done more ratings. Saying, whatever. We soldier on. I love this. I'm a big Aquaman fan, but I think the Brad Walker art helped a lot. It helped me think, okay, so maybe they are going to try something a little different art-wise with these books.
Yeah. It's not even like revolutionary. It's just,
no, not at all. It's just not house style.
Yeah,
it's almost like being in a desert. You get a little bit of water.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, this is fantastic.
Yeah, it was with the water. There you go. There's the Aquaman connection. I was disappointed at the lack of chowder in this issue, but I assume we'll get more. But yeah, no, this was interesting. It was definitely, it was definitely a compelling take. I personally was surprised that it was your pick of the week, though, Connor. I mean, I
love Aquaman.
I wasn't.
Yeah, I mean,
I love Aquaman.
Yeah, I know you do, but I thought maybe the Flash number one would.
Well, the Flash was, there were three books that made it to the end, and I was really glad to not have to write a 1,000-word review at the end of agonizing over. So I came out to three books. The Flash number one from Josh Williamson and Carmine DJ Giadomenico was very, very close. It came in third. It got the bronze, but this was also great. And again, Carmine D. I'm just going to call him Carmine.
Carmine DG. Call him the Big Ragu.
The Big Ragu also drew the Rebirth issue, so it's not so surprising. But again, this is another DC book that does not look like DC books used to look like.
I really like the Big Ragu.
The Big Ragu is really great.
I don't love. I wish that they would pull it back a little with the Photoshop effects and the coloring.
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
Just because, like, the line work is so nice that if they had sort of drawn that into the art itself, it would have been cool. But I get it.
Matthew Wilson can't color everything.
It's true.
We're going to see that. We're going to see that a couple times.
Jordy Belair could do it.
And Dave Stewart?
Dave Stewart can't color it all.
But this is a nice fusion, Ron, I think, of the TV show and the art and comic worlds. They found a nice middle ground. They even go to Jitters.
Yeah, I saw that. So
I rolled by a little bit. They didn't go all the way over. They went like up to the 12 and they came back down to the 3.
Yeah.
But I think this is great. I mean, I'm trying to, I like how the lines on the suit sort of come off of the suit.
Yep.
You know, they're sort of lightning bolts and not just stupid, dumb yellow lines on a suit for no reason. Although it only really happens in this comic, and when he appears in other books, it's really terrible. I mean, this is great. This is really fun.
So that's a point for the colorist.
Yes, I assume the colorist is doing it.
Well,
I
don't, at least them working together. He's executing it.
I mean, it's still, I'm going to try to get over it and not mention it every time, but like the Flash, I think, has one of the best all-time superhero costumes.
It's, absolutely.
Simplicity, it's wonderful, and they made it unsimplistic, and it's
awful. I do think that it is one of those costumes that looks great on a page, but like making it into the real world doesn't really work all that well.
Possibly.
Like that's why they put those other lines on it, because it just looks weird as one sort of blank red.
But it worked as blank red for so long. I mean, I think it worked. I don't know. I mean,
I'm talking about in real life.
It worked fine in the 1990s TV show.
Yeah.
But that was all velvety and shit. Like it was
He realized George Costanza's dream in the early 90s.
Yep. He was entirely ensconced in velvet.
I don't know, I'm really excited to be reading The Flash in comics again. I mean, it's, you know, like, as we know, I've been enjoying the TV show, and now, you know, I'm excited what the direction Josh Williams is taking it in. I think they're taking in the right influences from the TV show, but the fact that it's tied so much into what's going on in the greater DC universe is like just an added kind of thing. It's exciting. Yes. Exciting time for a Flash fan. I really enjoyed this. So.
Although he kind of shunted it all aside at the beginning.
Like, yeah.
Batman and I, you know, we're going to work on it, but not right now.
I got a case to solve. So.
Yeah. But it was this felt great. This felt really good. And also, talk about, again, untraditional art, Wonder Woman number one from Greg Rucka and Liam Sharp, colors by Laura Martin. Liam Sharp, again, I think very non-traditionally DC art.
Yeah.
Which is the most I could say about... I don't know what it is about when Greg Rucka writes Wonder Woman that I just don't feel connected to.
Yeah. I was very, very impressed by Liam Sharp.
Yes.
Yes.
Very impressed. Yeah.
So, and also, I picture Steve Trevor as Rock and Roll from G.I. Joe. which makes me really happy.
In this world, Rock and Roll dated Wonder Woman.
That's pretty cool.
It's him.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I connected with it from a story standpoint. I mean, it was all right, but I found myself, kind of enjoying the art as I turned from page to page and less.
Yeah, the Liam Sharp art's really great. The final page with Cheetah revealed, a really great page. Yep. This is, these four books were four books that, or yeah, three books. Books that did not look anything like a DC book looked 6 months ago.
Yeah.
It feels like they're, I don't know if they're listening to us, but they're listening to somebody else must have thought that. Like, we have to make these books look better.
I definitely think that if you look at these three books together as like a sampling of the new status quo, or whatever, it's, you know, it's probably too early to pronounce victory, you know, because sales will dictate and all this sort of stuff. But right now, going in a good direction.
You guys probably talked about it last week, but like, even the Fincher Batman book looked better than.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did.
Like, I was like, that wasn't offensive.
Yep.
that's not quite as far as I'm willing to go, but you know. Those are all good things. We haven't been able to say good things like that in a while. It's always like, look, the art on this is interesting. We, you know, that's.
Yeah.
That Cho cover and the Carl Kurtz, the covers are great.
The variant covers are really
Herschel good. Herschel cover on Flash. And the Dave Johnson cover.
I assume that, Ron, you're sticking with the Flash, but not Wonder Woman or Aquaman.
TBD. I'm definitely sticking with the Flash. Depending on how big the weeks are when stuff comes out, I would probably read Aquaman next and then Wonder Woman. So at some point I will fall off. It's just a matter of when.
Right. I'm almost exactly where he is. Like,
at some point, the Bronco's going to buck you off.
Just, yeah, exactly.
I also just think like the novelty of it's going to go away, and if it's not super gripping, then I won't want to keep up with it.
Yeah.
Right. All right.
And Wonder Woman, like the only reason I'm reading Wonder Woman now is because I want to like it.
Yes.
And it's not because I do like it.
I really wonder, she's a character like Superman... For different reasons, though, where the weight of the character's symbolism is too much for the storytellers.
Interesting.
I feel like they're too worried about telling a story that checks all of these buckets when they're just not, and they're not just telling a story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like the searching for who I am story. I don't need it. I don't care. I don't need you to have her find out who they are. I need you to make a decision about who she is and tell that story. Oh, if that makes sense.
I get it.
Same thing with I'm almost that way about Flash. I'll probably keep with, I like Flash, and I'm really happy that you guys are happy with it, but I'm also not super compelled by it. If that makes a difference.
Now we put the show together, and everybody, you know, the person with a pick produces the show.
Ratings.
I solicit the other books that the guys want to talk about, and Josh goes, I'd like to talk about two Dan Jurgens comics. I was like, whoa. All right. And speaking of art, Justice League 52 with art by, well, written by Dan Jurgens, art by Tom Grummett, and one of the inkers was Scott Hanna. I was like, Yeah. Talk about being transported back to the 90s.
Danny
for me, in a good way, because I loved Grumman and Hanna as an art team in the 90s.
So the Superman Lex story, like, first of all, I don't know why this is in Justice League. No idea. And I don't remember which action, or I guess action was the one where they're fighting. So then Justice League was basically a bit of a backstory on why Luthor is Superman now in his own mind.
It's all a mess.
It's not. I love it. I'm completely.
No, I mean, the story fights where these things live is a mess.
Yeah, totally. And I like, if you had to ask me to explain it to you between Rebirth, Superman, action, like, I don't know. I'm reading them all as they're coming out. And for some reason, I'm super into it. And maybe Dan Jurgens writing Superman is what I actually wanted. Maybe this is the thing that.
He didn't write a Green Arrow that felt relevant and fresh, but for some reason, he is tuned into Superman's world. It doesn't all make complete sense, but it's not his fault. Oh, I read it. Yeah, definitely. But it's not his fault. Good. It doesn't make sense. But these are good. These are good, solid Superman books.
Like that Justice League issue with Luthor is great. And because the whole time you're like, fuck that guy, and you're kind of like, yeah, but you know, like, you can't pin down on where he is or where you want to be on him, and that is really interesting.
That's
that
where Luthor needs to live.
Yeah, I don't like Luthor as a straight up villain. It doesn't work that way. Like he works as a guy with dubious morals, who is trying to help, but because he's, I don't know. It's great. He's great, and this was like, it's so stupid. Like him in his suit that he got from Apocalypse, but it works. Like I totally want to know where this story is going to go. And then even at the same time, over in action, I didn't hate the Darkseid story Doomsday story so much. Mm-hmm. Because of the stuff that was going on around it, like what that meant and watching these guys have to work together. Like Doomsday was just sort of there as the deterrent, but it wasn't the story.
Right. It was about Superman and Lex being a team.
Yeah. So I'm digging these issues.
I thought the coloring and action hurt the art.
There were a couple of pages. There's a page where Superman catches the train and it looks like, not good.
Wait, does he physically catch a train?
He just made it
as it was fully, like.
First of all, that's very funny. Because I did not say it like that.
No, he says there's a scene.
And now I'm just picturing, like, over here, taxi.
Yeah, there's a scene where he catches a train, and it's literally like him, like, looking to see what track it's on and running.
it's not that. And
holding his fedora on while he runs. With his briefcase.
No, he literally gets his hand. Yeah.
The conductor's half out of the door with the watch looking, making sure. It's
looking at his pocket watch, shaking his head. Mm, not gonna make
it. Do you have that? Do you have that in front of you, Connor?
Yes, I do.
There's a page where, like, he grabs the front of the train and, like, gets the windows pop. And, like the faces inside the train are just, it looks like they blew it up from a smaller photo.
I need to get the 607 to Smallville.
Trying to move on, Richard.
I thought the Patrick Zercher art was not as strong as the last issue.
Yeah, maybe it definitely
just came out 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it definitely had a week to get this done kind of thing going on. And it wasn't like that through the whole issue. It was just sort of near the.
I thought the coloring was very.
It's the coloring, so, actually. Yeah.
The coloring is really bizarre, and this is very heavy-handed. But you're right. I like this idea of. It's sort of a play on the death of Superman, in which you've got the old Superman plus Lex Luthor trying to take over, and neither one's given an inch on it.
The other Clark, which is
Other Clark.
Yeah, it's I'm gonna go ahead and walk back some of my earlier reservations. So right. I'm having fun with it. Let's keep going.
Now the book that was very nearly pick of the week came in second was Power Man and Iron Fist #5, David Walker, guest artist Flaviano. I was. First, when I opened the issue and saw that it wasn't Sanford Green, that's who it is, right?
Yeah.
I was bummed, but by the end of it, I was into the Flaviano art, and this was a really, really fun one-shot. The first sort of official adventure of Power Man and Iron Fist as a team through the lens of a local DJ who's narrating the action.
That's supposed to be Sam Jackson from Do the Right Thing, right?
That's who I heard in my head.
Okay. Okay. Well, look at his face.
Yeah, I really like the turning the prism on the story and hearing, you know, like, so there's this Power Man Iron Fist fight this guy, and you hear about it from the person who like took the viral video, and then the hot dog vendor, and then from the actual guy. Like, it's, everybody has their different point of view of the story, and I thought that it was...
Well, it's the Rashomon effect, right?
Yeah, so it's Well, the, look at you. I mean, the whole thing about it, just like the whole series for me so far, it was right on the edge of being, like, too cute, but it was on the good side of it, so I had fun with it. It was a great issue.
Yeah,
it was great. I mean, it's when you pair the right creator with the right character, you get a magical book like this. I think I'm prepared to call this a little magical book. It's 5 issues.
Yep.
And they haven't dropped the ball. They've created this tone and this wonderful voice for these characters that feels very authentic and real, and you don't get it in any other book, to the point where these characters are going to start to feel wrong in other books.
They need to cancel it at 8.
Yeah.
It never goes, it always goes downhill from there.
I just love how big they make Luke Cage. When they're in the radio station doing the interview, he's just, it's like he's squeezing into the room. And it's ridiculous, and it's on that edge, Josh, of being really cartoonish, but in this particular world, I think of this book, it really works.
So is Manslaughter Marsdale...
It's awesome. Man.
The exact same character, but just with less moral fortitude.
Maybe.
Seems like it.
Because he can't feel pain. I guess that's not the same as Unbreakable Skin.
Yeah.
Right, that's different.
I think I'd rather have the Unbreakable Skin.
I don't want to feel pain.
Yeah, but your arm could be hanging off.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, if you don't feel pain, that actually is a real syndrome, and it's dangerous because you don't know if you're injured or not.
Right, yeah.
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
All right, cool.
It was hard, but you know, it's
hard, to like.
No, it's hard to. It was a hard choice between this and Aquaman.
Yeah.
Lately, I haven't really had that dilemma. This was like I had to sit in it for a while.
Right. How long?
Well, I spent my lunch break thinking about it.
I know we're under a deadline here, but I can't help but just. I don't know.
You know, you made a joke about 30 seconds ago about all going wrong. Well, I see that next issue is all about Civil War II, so possibly that's where it goes wrong.
There you go.
They're gonna have to get whenever something's going really great, there's an event that sucks them in there. You're just like, all right, or like see Ms. Marvel.
Yep. Well, one book that had the Civil War II banner that I read, but not because of the Civil War II banner, was Totally Awesome Hulk number 7. And
still reading this. I forgot about this, and then I fell behind.
Never started. Haven't been reading it at all. Luckily, I can report on, as we started last week, Josh, you missed it, but I'm enjoying Adventures in Marvel releases that have the Civil War II banner that have nothing to do with Civil War II, and this issue had nothing to do with Civil War II at all. At all. But nothing.
Ratings.
But can you make one guess why I randomly started reading this issue?
Alan Davis
art, inked by Mark Farmer, and it looks glorious. Alan Davis draws an amazing Hulk, and he's one of my favorite artists. And I was really surprised that this is actually really good. Like, I have no idea what's going on in the Hulk world. I don't know what Greg Pak's doing, but so apparently
Greg Pak knows Hulk.
Amadeus Cho has the Hulk power and has control over it and can change, go green and go back down at will. And Banner is completely gamma free and has no Hulk in him at all. And this issue was all about him dealing with that. And he's kind of.
So wait, why is he being targeted in Civil War then?
I guess we'll find out. But in this book, he's got zero gamma radiation and he gets angry and he doesn't turn into the Hulk. But then he goes on a lot of self-destructive behavior, and he's doing crazy stuff. And I guess he's trying to trigger the Hulk or trying to, you know, figure it out or whatever. And then Iron Man comes down because he's concerned about him. And Banner is in a casino, and I don't know why. And Banner loses it and says, you know, like, I just want to be left alone. You shot me into space. You lied to me, and just, you know, and bangs the table. And Tony says, you know, you're right, and steps out of the armor and says, you want to take a shot? Take a shot. And then Banner realizes that he doesn't have any anger and isn't the Hulk, and so he hugs Tony, and that's how it ends. And it was
I thought he was always angry.
Yeah, well, no, it says my name is Bruce Banner, and I used to be the Incredible Hulk, and that's how it ended. So,
happily ever after.
Hopefully, well, doubtful, but nothing to do with Civil War II, but a whole lot to do with Alan Davis. And if he's on this book on a regular basis, I will keep reading it. So, there you go.
You know what's interesting is that a couple years ago, was it Sean Murphy who said that the anchor was going to go away?
Yep.
And we talked about that on iFanboy at the time, and
yep.
And we do these shows, and we put together the scripts with the creative teams on it, and there are no more inkers on the new books, but only two. We're talking about a lot of books this week. Only two of them had inkers. One was Alan Davis and Mark Farmer, and the other was what we just talked about, Action Comics with Tom Grummett, and three inkers: Danny Mickey, Mark Morales, and Scott Hanna. And the old school guys are like, "Fuck that!" I'll pencil this, but also
I think, you know, going back to last week, and Josh wasn't here, but we commented about David Finch's artwork on Batman, and he had an inker, and I think that had a lot to do with why it was, you know, like why it was less Finchy, you know, like it was, you know, inker brought the lines in a little, and so
There's two other things going on there. One is that for the DC books where they've got to go every 2 weeks, they can't. Like, they have to have more people working on them just to
get it. Only one. It was just the one with Tom Grummett. None of the other books had inkers.
Well, yeah. Okay. I'm sorry.
Aquaman did it.
I know that I've been writing lists of inkers every time.
Aquaman had an inker and Justice League had an inker.
Yeah. On those sort of big books, I feel like production-wise, they need a bigger team to get it done. But the other side of it is, economically, rates are lower.
Yeah.
Than they have.
It's cost saving.
And it's, you know, 20 pages instead of 22. So if you're an artist, you want to get paid more. So you're going to do your own inks if you can.
Yeah,
sure.
That's the thing that's happening. But most of them are these old school guys, they don't have to do that.
They're like, fuck it. In my day,
Sienkiewicz is like, I don't even want a pencil. Just give me something to ink. Yeah. I'll do that. Yeah. And it's wonderful.
All right. So what's also wonderful is all of you wonderful people in the iFanbase who have chosen to step up and help support iFanboy. We thank you for doing that, and we want to thank you again, because we'll do it every week because we love you. And remind you, if you haven't yet, you can go to ifanboy.com/support, and there you can find different ways to support iFanboy. If you shop on Amazon, there's a link there to go shop on Amazon, and it passes our little code, and therefore every item you purchase at Amazon, we get a little cut from Amazon. Nothing comes out of your pocket. It comes directly out of Jeff Bezos' pocket and into ours, and we thank everybody who does that. Very excellent. If you need to buy a television, we recommend Amazon. And finally, there's a link there to make a direct donation via PayPal of any denomination you like. We thank everyone who does that as well. That's the true sign of generosity. We appreciate it. And of course, we want to thank all of our iFanboy members who have signed up at $3 a month to $30 a year to help support iFanboy. And stay tuned, because we've got some exciting stuff coming in the world of ways for you to support iFanboy. So we're going to keep teasing that until we announce it. But good stuff coming. So thank you in advance.
If Brian Wood wants to keep doing medieval hack/chop in barren wasteland stories and comics, who am I to stop him?
Right.
So Black Road number 3 is out. And I'm just like, oh. It's basically Northlanders, and that's great, because that book ended just as it was getting really good for me.
Yeah.
And I just want to make sure that people know that, because I would like to keep reading it.
Yeah, I'm glad that he went back to this genre, you know, and, you know, because Northlanders was great, and clearly he does it well, and this is fantastic. So
yeah,
I've liked this book more with every issue. I didn't love issue one, but I like two more than one, and like three more than two.
Yeah, we're on, what are we on? They're on three, and... Yeah. Like, each one has definitely given us something more. I don't know what it is, or I don't know what's going to happen quite yet, but I'm more intrigued as we keep going on, as opposed to less, so.
Cool.
It's good. It's beautiful, too. It's really well done.
So, earlier I was talking about Civil War 2 tie-in books. This one definitely tied into Civil War 2. It's called Civil War 2 Choosing Sides, number 1. And I just wanted to highlight quickly, this is just a little anthology of like kind of three satellite stories that are going on in and around the conflict of Civil War 2. But I wanted to highlight and give a little high five to Mr. Declan Shalvey, who not only drew his story, but also wrote it. And I'm not sure if this is the first written, like, writing Declan's ever done or not. I don't know, but it might be, maybe.
Outside of
yeah.
So I think he's written stories, but
yeah. Well, hey, good job. So Declan is one of our favorite creators, one of my favorite creators, and so I was delighted to see that he wrote and drew his story, and so that was pretty. It was really good. So
I really liked The Ultimates number 8 this week. This is one of my favorite books. This is Kenneth Rocafort. It was back on art. I don't know. He's probably on the last one. I just was always happy to see he's on the art. This is also a heavy tie in Civil War II, in which we delve much more into Carol's point of view, why she's so militantly for violating people's civil rights by arresting them before they commit crimes. And I liked it. I mean, I'm not behind the Civil War story, but I did like this issue.
I've been reading this for the last few months or something like that, and I like, and we're gonna talk. I guess I can sort of segue this into the next one. There feels like a lack of coherence between how the characters are in the different books.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't know that I fully understand where they think Carol's coming from, because I'm getting a slightly different take on it and everything. And in this one, it felt in Ms. Marvel, it felt really manipulative. Like, she would explain it to her and then say, like, okay, good, now that you're on our side. And I was just like, that's fucking, that's awful to do to a young girl. You know what I mean?
Are we talking about Ms. Marvel? Or
I'm still talking about Ms. Marvel, but...
Wait, hold on, we're still on the Ultimates.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but yes, you're right. We can jump into Ms. Marvel, number 8, too, because it's similar. It's also about Carol getting Ms. Marvel on her side. And that one, yes, you're right. That one felt very manipulative and
okay, good. I thought wrong. That you were talking about, so it seemed wrong. Okay, got it.
Well, no, these are similar. That's why they're grouped together. That one, I don't think, at least I didn't feel good about Carol in that issue.
No, I felt really bad about it, which was, I really like her as a character. So it was, like, because I've been reading, not Alpha Flight, but whatever, her book, Captain Marvel. And so it was.
She does feel different in Captain Marvel than she does in these books. She feels more overtly, I don't want to say evil, but she's filling the Iron Man villain role of Civil War that he had in the original one.
Yeah,
it's unsettling.
Yeah, and they've really positioned Iron Man in the Captain America role of the first Civil War. Yeah, yeah. So,
it's unsettling, but I guess that's the point of it.
Yeah. It's not right sort of role.
I mean, you can see the point of view. It's like, okay, well, sure, stop the bad thing before it happens. But then, what does that mean? It's the Minority Report problem, right? It's are they actually a criminal if they've only thought about committing a crime and actually haven't done it yet? And that happens in Ms. Marvel, where she sends Marvel to stop somebody from robbing a store, but he hasn't actually even attempted it yet. He's just been thinking about it. And does that make him actually a criminal or not?
Right.
Clearly not. I think about doing... I think about running people over all the time in my car when I'm driving, and I don't actually do it. It's a weird position to put Carol in, I think.
Yeah, I just don't like how she was portrayed. But I don't like how she was portrayed in this book. It made her much more, right, and yeah. This story, do we know who any of those other characters are who showed up?
No, I've never seen them before.
That was a little rough. Like, here's a new team of people, and I was like, who the hell are all these? I just learned who all these people are in the book normally.
What was funny about the redhead was that they drew her with a freckly face, but it just looked like her face was dirty.
Yes, it did. Looked like she had pock marks.
Like, I was like, why is her face? Oh, it's supposed to be freckles. It just didn't work. Yeah. Do that with the coloring. Don't do it with pencil and ink. It just made her look like she had like a tattoo on her face.
Yeah, or like Aquaman scales.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But clearly, if you look at the cover for the next issue, Ms. Marvel's not having any of it. So, we're getting evil Carol.
Carol. Yeah.
Maybe when she cut her hair off, that was like Samson's morality.
Nice.
So, Sam Wilson, Captain America, number 10, or vice versa, however that is. Basically, Sam has to give the eulogy for James Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes into the back room of this, it's an AME church, and it's like every...
I'm sorry, it's an A&E church?
AME, which is a black church.
Oh.
With a giant cathedral. I just watched the OJ thing, and the AME church in LA was a big part of that story. Anyway, which is why I remember that. And every black superhero from Marvel is in the room. It's like Misty Knight, Black Panther, Luke Cage, Storm, Dr. Voodoo, new Nick Fury, and the girl who I don't know. And I don't know. It was... I don't know that Nick Spencer was the person to write this.
Yeah.
I hate to say that, but like in the sort of atmosphere with which we live now, and the idea about, well, do you want white guys to be writing this kind of thing? Like, it just felt like they probably should have gotten somebody else to do it. That would be slightly more authentic. Now, then there's also the use your imagination. But either way, like, I don't know. It didn't seem right. It was something was off about the whole thing. And like, they were all at the funeral, and he kept saying, like, you know, and Tony's going through a thing. And I was like, well, I don't know that that's what's happening with the story. I don't know. It wasn't quite right. Looked good. They looked really good.
All right.
Well, I guess
did either of you read this?
No, but I mean, it just gets into dangerous territory when you can all, when you can't have someone write someone who's not themselves.
It totally does, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but I thought it's hard to speak to some of this experience if you're not having this experience.
I get that. I'm
not saying so
we talk about the voice in Power Man Iron Fist being more authentic because the creative team is black. I totally get it. I also think we're in a weird, dangerous
time. Yeah, but at the same time, like, if I'm the editor or I'm Nick Spencer, like, well, you're telling this story, so why isn't it in there? But the fact that he got all those other heroes together in that room, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure about it. That's not even a bad review. It's what I was thinking about as I was reading it. But he gave a big speech, and it was fine. It's good. And then Rage shows up at the end.
Right. Rage?
Rage.
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 With the yellow mask? With the yellow mask?
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Nice. Right on.
They're going to take a stand, and Rage has their backs. That's sort of the last page reveal.
Rage.
Mighty Thor, number 8, had nothing to do with Civil War, number 2. But there was a moment in it that made me laugh. are either of you reading this? Or?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so there's a big secret meeting, kind of Illuminati-esque meeting amongst evil corporate villains. Like Sebastian Shaw and the head of Alchemax and Ezekiel Stain and Shingen Harada from the Ashita Corporation and Kingpin. And there's like a 4-panel shot of everyone around the table as they're meeting. And the panel with Sebastian Shaw and Darren Cross. And I looked at it. I was like,
I just saw it.
It's like, why does it look like Darren Cross is on a little chair on the table? And then I scrolled, and then I went to the next page, and I see the big table, and there's a little tiny chair, and he's the villain in Ant-Man, which makes sense. It's Darren Cross from the movie, and I'm not reading Ant-Man, so I don't know, is he permanently ant-sized or whatever, but they brought a little chair for him to sit on.
I am reading Ant-Man, and I don't remember that part.
Yeah, I don't know why. Like, can he, wouldn't, I feel like, I don't know if he has the power to go full size. I don't know what's going on in the characters. I don't know if he's permanently that size or whatnot. I assume he is, because did he bring the little chair? Did they have the little chair for him? Or, like, why didn't you just go full size? Like, every time they show the table and the little chair, I giggled. I don't know why.
I want to know how come the villain, what's her name, has lipstick, Oubliette Midas, lipstick on the outside of her mask.
Well, it might be painted on.
It's weird.
Yeah, well,
so when she talks, what does it do? It just sort of wiggles?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
I think Russell Dowderman's about getting to be about top 10 now.
Yeah, he's really good.
Really good.
Yeah. And so then finally, I just wanted to mention the fact that a little deviation of Star Wars Corner, several months later, Marvel has come out with Star Wars The Force Awakens, the official comic adaptation. And this is written by Chuck Wendig, who wrote the book, the Aftermath book came out, which I
just finished it.
I did not read that.
Several months, like 6 or 7 months
later.
Like a month. Yeah, yeah.
And with art by Luke Ross. And I'm a big fan of the comic adaptation. I have very fond memories of my Return of the Jedi comic adaptation from the 80s. And unfortunately, this does not follow in that wonderful tradition at all. This was like watching the movie on like 2x speed.
Do you remember the Batman 89 adaptation?
Vaguely.
Yes.
I had like 3 of them, and they were like double bags. Like, this is going to be something.
Yeah.
And I remember that being really disappointing.
Yeah.
I think it was the last time I liked an adaptation.
This was super disappointing, but it is what it is, I guess.
I just don't know why they're doing it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's very strange. It's
like, come out with that the week traditionally they would come out a month before the movie came out, but the week the movie comes out, fine.
Yeah, but it's just very strange. It's just jumping from scene to scene. Like, basically the first issue covers all the stuff on Jakku and Finn and basically ends with them running to the Falcon, but it has no heart or no personality to it. It just is.
It's that Star Wars trilogy in 30 minutes thing.
Yeah, exactly. And then, and also the other thing, not to nitpick, but like, I understand, like, when back in the day they did the adaptations off of the script, and so there was often the comic looked slightly different than the movie because they didn't actually get to see the movie or whatever. But here, considering that it's 6 months later, they've clearly seen the movie, right? Yeah. And there was one moment when Finn frees Poe, and when they're on the Star Destroyer, and he pulls him aside, and he's like, "I need a pilot." That whole scene, and I gotta go back and look up the movie, but I'm fairly certain Finn didn't have the blood handprint stormtrooper helmet in that scene, right? I'm fairly certain that was.
Yeah, he took it off.
Yeah, he took it. It was
took the helmet off.
Yeah,
the helmet off. He was wearing the armor, but he took
right.
The helmet
no,
off.
No, but before he takes the helmet off when he's with Poe, he says Kylo Ren wants to see the pilot, you know, and so he takes him. In the comic, he still has the handprint on the helmet. I'm like, no, you can literally put the movie in and verify that. I don't know. I'm nitpicking, but so
you know what? Only one way to solve this.
I know. Go watch it.
I gotta go home and watch it again.
Exactly. Oh well.
I'll be back.
We'll all just wait here.
Yeah. All right. So that's all the books we enjoyed this week. We got some feedback from you, the listeners. Which one do we want to do first here?
Let's do the voicemail first.
Oh, there we go. All right.
Hey, fanboys. This is Ryan calling from DC. I have a question regarding the talk about Aquaman and the Rebirth book. And I saw that it was Pick of the Week this week. And that coincides nicely with my question, because my question is, you were complaining that Aquaman always has the same challenge with Atlantis of the isolationists versus the separatists. So what if they made it more complicated and made it more of a Game of Thrones type thing where there were different kingdoms and maybe Aquaman wasn't the supreme ruler or was trying to keep the kingdom together, or just generally make it a more complex, complicated story with a longer backstory and kind of tie into that cultural zeitgeist right now? So do you guys think that would work? Would that be interesting? Would you want to read it? Thanks, and I will take my answer off the air.
The one benefit to not doing the voicemail line anymore and having people send audio clips in is much better audio quality.
Very, yeah. Bravo, Ryan, on the audio quality. Good job.
Well, he's a podcaster of his own right.
True, yeah,
should,
yeah.
Should
yeah.
be.
I would be more surprised if it didn't sound good.
So. You're supposed to sound good.
So do we want to read a Game of Thrones-esque Aquaman?
No.
Why?
Why?
I don't know.
I wouldn't say do it because Game of Thrones is popular, but if that's an angle that you have, then
yeah, that, I mean that was my my instinct was like, no, I don't want a Game of Thrones ask anything.
Yeah,
but yeah,
I mean it would be interesting to dive into the world of Atlantis.
He caught the train.
Superman gets it. Catching the train. Oh. No, but it would be interesting to dive into the Atlantis kind of the factions and all that stuff. Because I guess the question is that like, what makes Aquaman work? Does Aquaman work when it's about the conflict of the people of the sea with the people of the land, or does Aquaman work when he's underwater all the time?
Well, Aquaman,
go ahead.
The most popular long running version of Aquaman, the Peter David run, was mostly underwater stuff.
Right. Yeah.
It was kind of what Ryan's talking about.
Yeah.
Which was all about the politics and the power struggle in Atlantis.
Yep.
I mean, obviously he came out.
That's modern times. I mean, he went on for decades, not just.
Sure. I'm talking in the modern sense, the most popular version of him was that.
I mean, I would tend to think that it works best when you're focusing on the character and the sort of his internal struggle. It's not that different from Superman's in a way, although one of his cultures isn't dead. I always tend to go back to Justice League Year One as being one of my favorite, and it was like I almost said a fish out of water, and then I just tried to think of anything else.
Is that with the whispering where nobody could hear him?
Yeah.
And like he's, you know, he's coming from a different culture, but he's trying to help out with this other thing, and he doesn't. He doesn't fit in story forever, yeah. But I don't know. That's my instinct, but that's sort of the more human approach as opposed to the big epic story approach.
Right.
So I think those are two ways to go. I don't think they.
Yeah.
As long as somebody nails down who the character is and what the character wants, and then you've got something. But I don't know that that's been done successfully in a while.
Yeah.
Every version of him is a little different, so that like if you were to ask me what Aquaman is like, I don't know that I can tell. Right now, he's just heroic.
Right.
He likes seafood. He likes chowder.
I thought it was interesting that in this issue this week, when he introduced himself, it wasn't "I'm King Arthur." It was just "I'm Arthur Curry."
Yeah.
I get they're trying to sort of make him the more casual king, but if they're sort of pumping up the fact that he's the king of the seven seas, and that he's the king of more area mass on the globe than anyone else, and they haven't really played up the king part.
Well, maybe his thing is to just be like, if I just act like I'm one of the people, because I really am, you know, like the like I ended up with all this, like, what's his name in Love Actually? Prime Minister. Like,
right.
Just, oh, I just happen to be Prime Minister, but I'm an okay guy. Like, that's kind
but
of
the, but that was what in the beginning, and then but then he had to be actual he had to act Prime yeah. Minister.
Well, there's your turn.
Yeah.
Yep.
You ever just think that maybe 60 years of Aquaman story is they just did them all?
Well, they have all been done. It's about finding new variations of the old stories.
maybe we just close up Aquaman. We're done.
Maybe they just tap out, man. It's okay.
Who knows? All right. So thank you, Ryan. And you could send in a voicemail if you want to record a voicemail and with your computer and email it to us. Email it to contact@ifanboy.com. We love getting them, so do it. We got time for the email?
Yes.
Yeah, I think we do. Email comes from Levins from Sydney, Australia, who says, I've been listening to some of your early episodes lately, which fascinates me. And in episode number 187, a listener, his name was pronounced Tuquan, asked you the most 2009 question ever. Between Bendis, Kirkman, and Miller, who would you guys consider the best? Connor and Ron said Bendis. Josh said Kirkman. I was curious about how you'd answer that same question 7 years later. My guess is all you'd say Kirkman now. Thanks for hosting my favorite podcast each week. You inspired me to start my own comic book podcast called Serious Issues earlier this year. Congrats. Good job, Levins. Everyone go check out his podcast.
Good title.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Serious Issues. It's a good title.
Good title.
So my reaction to this is, how are you defining quote-unquote best?
See, that's the part of the question that's good.
Yeah.
You have to.
Right.
Well, in 2009, clearly the best was Bendis. He was ruling comics.
Yep.
Yeah, but I don't think that's what like that. If that's not, that's, I wouldn't say that's my yardstick for.
Well, you didn't pick him. You picked Kirkman.
Yeah. Right.
He was also writing my favorite books in 2009.
Yeah.
He was still doing Avengers. He was still doing Ultimate Spider-Man. So that was I think that would have been an easy answer in 2009.
When was the manifesto?
That was around then. Yeah. Yeah, let me look that up.
So if it's like, who's the best person?
That was 08. It was 08.
Okay, so.
After the manifesto.
Yeah.
Like, who's the best at turning their stuff into success? I think that at this point, Bendis is out of the running.
Yes.
If you're looking at it from a sort of commercial standpoint,
I don't think the question is who's the best businessman.
Yeah, okay. The question. Yeah, so well, then, I mean, that's what I meant by who, what's best. Mean. I mean,
who's telling the best story? Like, yeah. do we all want to get on the same page for that? I just want to make a pick based on what we think that means.
I think it means who's the best storyteller writer. Who's the best businessman? If it's the best businessman, it's obviously Robert Kirkman. Okay. But
well, no, I think it's Miller too. I think Miller. Yeah.
I think Kirkman's a. I think Kirkman has a bigger business empire than Miller does.
He does, but Miller is
also.
Very,
I think that. I feel like with all three of them, they're all very good at the thing that they chose to
focus on.
To focus on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you're talking about a guy who's Miller, you know, you can make a real case for Miller is that he made a thing so he could do his comic books and then farm out the other stuff to make it possible to do more of those comic books and make. He actually uses that to make better and better comic books. Like,
and
he's like, who else? What other amazing artist can I get?
And name any other creator who has had as many movies made as he does. Like, if you think about it, Mark Miller
So who's the best movie maker?
No.
Oh,
but,
that's not the question.
No, but I think the argument, but the argument also is bolstered by over the past couple of years. What have we been talking about? The renaissance of Mark Miller.
No, I think, that's my answer. Yeah, if you're asking right now who's the best of those three in terms of creating comics, storytelling, writing, it's Miller. For sure.
I agree. That's what I was going to say too. I think, which is really interesting, by the way.
Yeah.
Because we had all written him off for dead.
Yep.
but I mean, put it this way: if your goal was to be the ultimate ongoing superhero comic book writer, Bendis got what he wanted.
Yeah.
I mean, he is that.
Yeah,
he's
but
the
yeah.
definition of it. Now, that's
yeah, and that he's well, and he's well on the road to becoming Len Wein and Chris Claremont. I mean, he is.
He's the elder statesman now.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, he got powers as a TV show, but it's not, you know,
it's a TV show. It's on It's on PlayStation.
It's not rocking the world by any means, you know. And Kirk,
no one likes it.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, and Kirkman's has had his success, but also he hasn't been able to replicate the success of The Walking Dead. And you know, and honestly, like on the comic side of things, I mean, we still love Invincible, we still love Walking Dead, but like, are you guys reading Outcast?
I am.
Yes.
Is it good?
Yes.
We never talked about it on the show.
It's actually very different.
For
him. Yeah. Well, a lot of books we don't talk about on the show.
It really is one of those things that I read and I kind of like. I don't have a lot to think about it, and so again, that's where you give that edge to Miller, is that like he's doing stuff that's wowing us. Whereas, I am really impressed by Kirkman's stuff. Still, but he's still like, I just kind of want to do these things.
Yeah.
And that's cool.
I mean, keep in mind that the four Mark Miller movies have made over $900 million at the box office.
Yeah.
I think that's combined with the great creative output that he's been doing, I think, you know, like there's a strong case to be made of him over Kirkman at this point. So.
I would just, if I'm just sort of judging that, but they're different things. I mean, like Kirkman's thing, like clearly he wants to do a long ongoing comic book series and they're good. And Miller's like, here's another six issues of great. Here's another one. Although, you know,
not always.
No, I know. So in that sense, like it's more varied.
Yeah. My choice of best writer is Miller, but there's no one out. Kirkman is the only one, I think, right now doing the long, decade-long story.
Yeah, true.
Agreed. You know, there's no Cerebus, there's no Strangers in Paradise.
Yep.
You know, the only one I think I'm there probably is someone doing super indie stuff or smaller stuff. The only one really in any kind of big way doing, I've been telling the story for 10 years, is Kirkman on Invincible and The Walking Dead.
Yep, agreed. Yep.
And that's something.
Quest still going?
Spawn.
Falls in the forest.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
I don't know that McFarlane. Well, yeah. I guess Savage Dragon too.
Yeah. Yep.
But I'm all right. So of these three guys, I would, you know, they're all telling different kinds of stories. But I think the one I'm enjoying the most is the Miller stuff on the whole.
If you had to pick one that you get to keep reading their work, you'd go with Miller.
Yeah. It's a tough choice, because what if he switches back?
I think I could, and that could totally happen. Like, yeah. I honestly don't take anything away from either of those other guys, because I feel like they all have slightly different goals in mind. Obviously, Kirkman and Bendis had very different goals in mind.
Yeah,
you know, but if you asked Bendis if he could switch places with Kirkman, in his heart of heart, what would he say?
He'd never say it
publicly. Yeah.
But you, I mean, like, you think that, you know, of course he probably wanted Powers to be a much bigger thing than it was.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, like, that's got to be, after working so hard to get it made for all that time, just have it sort of arrive.
Yeah.
It did. It must have been somewhat of a bummer, only just distance by the time that it took.
Yeah, that's a whole nother thing.
I know.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. I actually haven't seen it, but I haven't seen it either.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anything that made me want to see it. And I went back and read the books like a year ago, and it's very much like, oh yeah, that's Bendis.
Yep.
Which is not as good of a thing as it used to be for me, which is kind of a bummer.
All right.
Not like Smith. It's not like that. It's not like, oh God.
Yeah.
But
good email. It's always fun to revisit a question from nearly 10 years ago.
I tried to look up the question, but I don't think we have any emails older than 2010 in our system anymore.
Yeah, and thanks to Quan.
Yeah. For originally writing that in. So, all right. So, if you have any emails, if you have any questions for us, you can email us or send in a voicemail. Send them all to contact@ifanboy.com. Don't forget to tell us who you are and where you're from, and most importantly, how long you thought about it. And Levin's failed to mention that, so that's not good. So
points deducted.
Yeah, points deducted indeed. So contact@ifanboy.com.
Speaking of things that are disappointing, we did a Warcraft podcast. Me and Ron and Mike Romo, a frequent contributor, talked about the film Warcraft a couple weeks ago.
I still say that had the movie just had one person say more work, it would have been better. So
that's all you would have needed.
It's a low bar to say what would have made the movie better. A lot of things would have made a coherent plot, perhaps, would have made the movie better.
Possibly.
Check that out. It's on the old feed. It was hidden behind the show. We put it out at the same time as a regular podcast, so it got buried a little bit. So if you want to listen to it, it's back there. If you ever played any Warcraft, check it out. I've been feeling very strongly I want to play Warcraft 3 again this week.
I was feeling the itch too, to be honest with you.
I don't know why, where it came from, but I was sitting there and I was like, Man, I really have to build a town right now.
Yeah. I looked and I was like, oh, doesn't exist for OS X, so I guess I'm out of luck.
It does.
You gotta get my disc with like the code, and then you get there's a patch. It was just enough to make me not do it, which was the right thing.
Yeah, yeah.
If it was on Battle.net, like,
yeah.
Oh man.
Frozen Throne, I don't think you can install. You can only install Warcraft 3, or at least the last time I tried.
Yeah. Oh man.
I did
so
it
good.
One. Like,
so good.
Like, since I moved here, so in the last 5 years, I definitely did it once.
Yeah.
I think I played through like a few levels of the campaign, and I got it out of my system, and then walked away and uninstalled it.
Great stuff. Great stuff indeed. So what else we got?
A couple of weeks ago, I talked to Tom King and Mitch Gerrards of Sheriff of Babylon. Tom King also does the Vision Batman. He's been doing around, so if you listen to my podcast, there are also lots of others, but they're not as good because I invited the artist on as well because this is a team sport. I don't know why you would. No, I'm kidding. I had a lot of fun talking to them, and it was really good to see people respond with that they enjoyed it. So there'll be another one coming up soon-esque.
Cool. Excellent.
Not with them. I did them already.
And
someone else.
And as we've mentioned every week since we wrapped up in April and while we were doing it, we did another podcast over at GoodfellasMinute.com for a podcast called Goodfellas Minute, where we analyzed the movie Goodfellas by Martin Scorsese. It was a blast. We're very proud of it. And you can still listen to it if you haven't had time to. If you're just starting, it's great to see people on Twitter just discovering it and listening to it and that sort of thing. So if you're looking for a podcast to fill the void of no TV this summer, go to GoodfellasMinute.com and it's evergreen. They're not going away. You can download them and listen to them and enjoy the hard work that we put into it.
Do you think the listeners are thinking to themselves, how long are they going to keep mentioning this?
Well,
the answer is we're not really sure. We're wondering the same thing.
Yeah. See, we're all together. We're all together in this. Yeah.
We don't know. We're not in control of this kind of thing.
It's rare that we're all on the same page with everyone and the listeners. We're all on that page.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure they know.
Head over to iFanboy.com to comment on this show. You can find Josh's Talksplode there. You can find the Warcraft podcast. You can go back further than that. Find, you know, X-Men, Batman or Superman. All kinds of things are there at iFanboy.com for you to listen to. You can also talk about this week's books on the post under the show. You can follow us on Facebook.com/iFanboy and at iFanboy on Twitter. That's where you can find out what the pick is before the show comes out. And you can follow us individually at Jay Flanagan, at C.S. Kilpatrick, and at Ron Exo.
And if you like this show, you could write a review on iTunes. You could rate it with
ratings.
We prefer higher ratings, but you have to do what it is for you. You know, and that only helps if you haven't done that. I know there are more people listening than have rated it.
Ratings.
It's so hard not to do that. Stormtroopers hitting the ground, or better yet,
8.5.
Seeing the tweets from the people who are recommending it on social media, and we always appreciate that as well. So keep that up. Keep doing it.
Thank all our viewers.
Did we not send him the memo, Ron? It turns out.
They're not viewers.
I hate seeing other people's jokes, but it's a really funny joke, and it's really fun to do.
It's a great joke.
Also, they came back.
It's like a podcast cover song. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, so
we're like the band in like some small Jersey town doing Bon Jovi songs. That's our level.
Yeah, exactly.
These jokes. We're not like, you know, what's that Beatles cover band that plays Vegas? We're not playing the big room in Vegas. We're playing Smith's Irish Pub in Trenton, New Jersey.
The tone isn't quite right. The drummer can't get that one bit of "You Give Love a Bad Name" right. But we're having fun, and that's what's important.
But the crowd loves it because the crowd loves a Bon Jovi song.
Because they're drunk and they're in New Jersey.
Yeah.
What's funny is that there are two types of cover bands, right? There's the cover band that is trying to emulate the band, right? Uh-huh. And then there's the cover band that are just a bunch of dudes playing the songs. And I feel like we're the latter. We're the latter.
I'm not pretending I'm Tom Cavanaugh. Right, although that'd be awesome to be Tom Cavanaugh.
Although I do have a lot of respect for the bands that are trying to be the bands they're covering. When you see one of those, it's pretty special.
Although I went to
the tribute band.
Tribute band, yeah.
I went to this guy's. This guy did a show. He's a John Lennon impersonator. And I saw him in L.A. and it was creepy.
Oh God, that freaks me out.
It was really creepy.
Yeah.
I saw Sean Lennon once, and it was also creepy, but for different reasons.
8.5.
I think it's Rain. Rain, a tribute to the Beatles, is the band.
Rain, yeah. Oh, God.
There's like a big Pink Floyd one, like Welcome to the Machine or something like that.
Yeah.
They used to always play in New York and Boston.
Yeah. All right, well.
And there's a ton of Zeppelin ones.
I know.
And then there's in Kiss the Bay, one with people.
In the Bay Area, there's a Smiths one called This Charming Band.
Is the Bay Area the only place that you get away with being a working
They're all over the country. They're all over the country. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. But those would be like the same 8 people going to each show, like in Nebraska.
I've seen them once. I'm like, that's about enough. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's about enough.
You have a white jaguar. Look at that.
That's about enough for the show as well, too. Okay. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
8.5.
I'll be appearing in my Cracker tribute band this weekend.
Oh, God. I hated Cracker so much.
I give that joke a 7.5. See you next week.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.